5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Welcome you back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Cadobio. It's Chris Algieri. We do this almost every week for the last 3 years with Chris Algieri, for the last 8 years in total. Inside Boxing Live, episode 4,325. And it's brought to you by PPV.com, the leader in live streaming boxing events. We'll be there December 6th for a big one, Lamont Roach and Pitbull Cruz. Thank you to Lamont Roach for coming on the show last week. We don't have many guests on this show, but when they do come on, they're good interviews. And Lamont Roach was an awesome interview. He'll be fighting Pitbull Cruz. Janabek versus Laura Oshaki. Foster versus Stephen Fulton. Triple header, San Antonio. Stream it live on PPV.com. We'll never ask you to lock in for a year. You can order fight by fight, no subscriptions, clear stream, phone, tablet, projector, anywhere. Watch it on your Nintendo, everywhere. How are you, Chris?
I don't have a Nintendo, but I do want to bring up something. I'm going to read this text exchange we had this morning. Just so
right
people,
away, coming out of the gates.
Just so people know what happens before these shows. So Dan texts me, I can go sooner this morning if you're ready. I put the this morning in so people understand. And I go, I'm on a run, homie. He goes, run faster, bro.
Yeah, man.
I'm trying to stay fit and keep it tight for the holiday, getting into the holiday season. And this guy's like, yo, get back to work. Okay.
Run faster. Like, I was giving you some inspiration. Not run faster to do the podcast earlier. Just run faster.
I took it as get your ass back here so we can do this thing and get, I can get my Sunday going. I'm trying to stay fit for the pod. We do a lot of podding. This is a grueling, grueling job. Probably the hardest thing I've ever done is working on IBL twice a week, bringing you guys all the boxing news. And I'm just trying to stay fit, trying to stay ahead of the game. And this guy is like, just doesn't let me live. So if anyone, you know, was ever wondering what things are like prior to these shows, in between these shows, it's a task. It's grueling.
Wait, so you're saying this is a tougher job than preparing for Ruslan Provodnikov?
Dude, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. Tougher than getting 2 degrees from higher education, tougher than my kickboxing world titles, tougher than boxing, tougher than commentating, all the work I have to do. This is by far the hardest. No, I'm kidding, guys. This is a lot of fun. It is work, but it's a lot of fun.
It's really not that much. I put together some notes, and it's funny because we never really talk about what we're going to talk about on the show. Even when we first get onto the Riverside, that program that we use that sometimes never works, sometimes works. And we just get right into it. We just, boom, this is it. I know it's Inside Boxing Live. It's not live. It's Inside Boxing Live to tape. But we're pretty much live. Like, we've never stopped and been like, hold on a second.
No, run that back.
I don't know what to say next. Yeah. I don't know what to say.
Well, so the point is that I'm saying, like, in terms of all the work that goes into it, like, just because we don't have to like do a ton of prep, doesn't mean that we're constantly working, because this is boxing and we both literally are dedicated to the sport. So everything we're ever doing related to boxing is preparing for each and every show.
Right. And I don't think anyone cares. The work happens after the show's done. The work happens after the show's done. It's the clips. I'm putting out everything, getting ready, preparing.
And battling people on Twitter. That's your
Oh, I just had a mute guy today called me a Nepo baby.
You're the, wow, that's a good one. You're the gladiator of IBL. You have to go to bat and go to war, shield and sword in hand, daily
this
on
guy,
Twitter.
This guy called me a Nepo baby, but he actually had his face on his picture. I wish he didn't have it. He was the most hideous looking guy ever. Oh. I block him immediately because I didn't want to ruin my morning.
You're attacking their looks. This is great. Twitter brings the best out of people. It really, truly does.
Once, I wish this troll didn't show his face. He knows who he is. All right, let's get into it. Big time fight over the weekend. A Ben has defeated a Eubank for the first time ever, Chris.
In history.
History.
History has was made. Ben is victorious over a Eubank. For those of you who don't know the backstory, their fathers fought, what was it, 40 years ago, 30-something years ago? Chris Eubank Sr. won the first one by TKO. Then the second one was a draw. Chris Eubank Jr. defeated Connor Ben, like 6 or 7 months ago, and by decision. And then last night, Connor Ben won by decision over Chris Eubank Jr., possibly putting the blood feud, family feud to rest, but who knows?
Well, did you catch after the fight, Ben said, as far as I'm concerned, the Ben and the Eubank saga is over. I have a kid, and Eubank has twins on the way. I was like, what is that? Like, so in 30 years from now, are they going to fight? Like, why did he put that little part in there? It was so weird.
It's also funny that now he's declaring it's over. All right, I got to win. We're good. We're going to move on. would it have been over? Like, it would still have been over? I don't know.
Right, exactly. Interesting. I think it is over. I hope it is over.
I think so, too.
That was a pretty one-sided beatdown. Unanimous decision. Ben drops Eubank twice in the 12th round. He outlanded Eubank 173-66. Eubank only landed 6 punches a round after landing 31 a round in the first fight. Eubank only landed 36 jabs in the entire fight after landing a career high 140 in the first fight. Obviously, we'll get to Eubank and the weight and him not looking good, 50 Cent, all of that. But Conor Ben gets the win. And maybe I'm a hater, but I'm going to say it anyway. I didn't watch that fight and say, wow, Conor Ben is a future champion. This is one of the best fighters in the world. I said, wow, this is the best version of Conor Ben we've ever seen. But he's going to get those shots. He's going to get title shots. He's going to get opportunities because of his name, because he's a figure in boxing. I mean, we've seen that. You can jump the line. People just are gravitated to what he's going to do next and want to see him lose, want to see him win. So we will see Conor Ben in big fights after this. And that, we said last week, was a big drawing point of this fight, is the winner of it's going to move on to bigger fights. And the loser, this time it's Eubank, may not fight again or may not be in a big fight. But I thought Eubank fought well. But I wasn't like, wow, this guy's a future champ. Conor Ben.
Okay. It's Sunday morning, guys. This is a common occurrence if you ever
correct me on the fly, Chris. Yep. My eyes and ears.
I got you. I'm locked in. Yes, Conor Ben, definitely best performance of his career. He fought what we said last time. Like, he needed to be more disciplined. And this was Chris Eubank's fight to lose. And he just never got out of first gear. I mean, he just had nothing from the opening. He looked uncomfortable. He looked frail. He looked unsure. He just couldn't get anything going, zero momentum, landed a few really good shots here and there, but couldn't build on anything. Conor, like I said, fought a very disciplined fight. He worked behind this jab. He's using that in and out. He's using lots of feints, a style that we really haven't seen him employ, but was always there. You know, he's an athletic, explosive guy. And I think there's a lot of ways to look at this. And I agree. I didn't look at that performance and be like, whoa, Conor Ben is the next big thing. I just saw him going out there, fought a good fight, not taking anything away from him, but Eubank just fought a god-awful fight and just really just, like I said, couldn't get out of first gear and was on fumes the last third of the fight. That 12th round, I'm surprised he made it out of the round. He used his experience to get there. But Ben, I mean, was just, he had all cylinders firing all night long, was super motivated. And I think that was a big part of this too, was the motivation. And you could kind of see in the buildup, you know, Ben was like chomping at the bit to get to this fight. And Eubank was like, I guess we're here again. We'll do it. And we said that, you know, a lot more to lose for Chris Eubank, because a loss here, especially the way that he lost, it's going to be really tough to get any of those big fights. That Canelo Alvarez fight was a very real option, I believe, if he had gotten a win here. Now I think that's off the table. I don't think anybody really wants to see two guys coming off a loss with both of them having, you know, bad performances. Canelo didn't look good against Crawford. Eubank did not look good against Ben this time. That would be, I think, a hard sell. But as far as Ben, in terms of what's next for him, and you said it, I mean, there's a big price tag on that kid. So he's going to get those big fights, those big opportunities. The question now is, can he get back down to 47? He weighed 59 this fight.
Bro, he looked huge.
Yeah, he looked bigger than Eubank. He came in at 59 at the official weigh-in, which is a couple pounds heavier than the last fight. And then on fight night, he was like 168. Like, that means he was actually cutting weight to make 60. Interesting to see. You know, he says he's going right back down to 47. That's a tough task, man. It's you know, he's not 23 anymore. I think he's 29 now. Going down in weight at the highest level, especially when you spent two camps preparing to be a real, at least put up a real middleweight performance, could be tough.
154, I just don't see him participating in that weight class at a high level. There are some real killers there. He's just too small for 154. 147 is a division that is going to be real interesting because it has a lot of big names in it. He can fight the winner of Haney and Norman. He can fight Ryan Garcia. He can look at Manny Pacquiao. He can look at Lewis Crocker, who I have. I'm going to be honest, bro. We follow the sport. Who follows the sport closer than us? Not many. I did not know Lewis Crocker was the IBF welterweight champion. Did you?
I did, but I didn't watch the win. I didn't watch him win that fight. The welterweight's kind of weird. You know, titles have been moving and changing hands, like kind of on the quiet, on the sneak. But yeah, I mean,
down low?
I'm not going to touch that one. Pause.
The DL. But, Lewis Crocker's winning titles on the DL. Like,
whoa.
He didn't bring up his name.
That's a big domestic clash. It doesn't have the name recognition, and it's probably a tough fight. So
yeah, but it's a title. Like, he was very clear that you know Ben was like, "I want a title." Of course, said first name he said was the Barrios. Name everyone's saying Barrios.
Right.
At what point does Mario Barrios start to get offended here?
As long as the checks keep clearing, I don't know if he gives a shit because he's making a ton of money.
I know, but like deep down inside, he's like he's got to feel a certain way, you know, like. Pacquiao's wife was like, "Yeah, I'll let you come out of retirement because this guy sucks." not so many words. Like, I even asked that to Barrios in the lead up in the media room, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm a little offended. Yeah, I got a little." And it didn't come out.
He didn't fight offended. So
no, he did not. But yeah, Ben immediately says, "I'm going to fight at 147." Yeah, 154. I just don't see it. He looked huge in the ring. And he looked big afterwards, so I couldn't tell. Was his face swollen from taking shots, or was he just looked so much bigger? And I mean, that's going to raise some eyebrows, given his background. We'll get to that in a second, or his past. But yeah, I agree. He's the perfect foil for some of these guys at 147, and they happen to be Americans. Whether it's Ryan Garcia, whether it's Rolly Romero, whether it's Mario Barrios, not so much Mario Barrios, whether it's Devin Haney. Whether it's Brian Norman, Ben is the perfect heel. He's the perfect UK adversary to these American stars. I want to see it. As like I just said, I didn't think he looked that great, but he looked just good enough. Like yeah, I liked he was just he looked different. Like Chris, you said he fights with a lot of rage, and I think we can all agree that yes, he does fight with a lot of rage. In the past, we've seen the guy just load up on shots and. He just didn't fight a disciplined fight, but he did on Saturday. And it's going to come with an asterisk. A lot of this is going to come with an asterisk because Eubank was just shot. And so it's very hard to properly gauge what we saw on Saturday night at in this fight. It was, are we giving Ben credit for how he looked, which it was one of the best he's ever looked? Are we giving him all the credit? Are we not giving him credit, I should say, because of this rehydration clause? Are we not giving him credit because Eubank is 36 years old and kind of past it? So it's very interesting. I think you have to use your eyes. I think I said this on Twitter, like boxing is a sport of variance. There's a lot of different variables going into every single fight. You have to use nuance, which a lot of people don't want to use. You have to look at everything. I think if you look at everything, the rehydration clause is going to be a big part of the story of not only this fight, but both fights. Just how it is.
Yeah, of course. It is variable. It is a factor. And listen, like you said, you got to use your eyes. If anyone looked at that fight and said Chris Eubank looked like he was primed and ready to go, you're making things up. He just did not look good. He looked really thin too. Like if you looked at his arm, he looked smaller than Ben. And maybe it was just because he was relative next to Ben. Could Ben look bigger that night and therefore made Eubank looks smaller and more frail. But I go back to the confidence. He just looks so unsure with everything coming his way. The first right hand that hit him, he didn't really like it. He came right back and cracked Ben with a good shot. But you could just tell punch resistance wasn't there. The conditioning wasn't there. The jab wasn't there. The footwork, everything wasn't there. And he pretty much fell apart in the last round. But you're asking like, you know, how do we rate Ben? It's going to be really difficult. Until Ben fights someone under the age of 35, it's going to be hard to really rate where he's at, because all of his best wins are against guys north of 35. Myself, Chris Eubank Jr. I was almost 38 when I fought him. Chris Eubank is 36 now. And even though it's a couple weight classes up, which you gotta give him credit for doing that. But yeah, we got to see him with some of these young studs, you know, these young guys that are all around welterweight and super welterweight. You know, there's a lot of really tough competition out there, but we got to see him with guys that are closer to his age and not faded former world-class guys.
I'm 38 years old, and I have a hard time getting out of bed. Just stepping in the ring with Conor Ben. Brian.
I'm 41. I'll be 42 early next year, and I do not have a problem getting out of bed. I feel just fine.
I feel great. Let's be honest. I am in the best shape, dude. Have you seen my thirst traps, Dan, on Instagram? I hit 180, 180 pounds for the first time since college.
Damn, dude.
And that was all beer weight.
Well, now it's not, because you're not a beer
straight
guy.
Muscle, G.
You're gluten free, so it's not beer anymore. Now you're you moved into a complex that has a good gym, and there's honey babies walking around all the time. So you need to you're like, your testosterone is like peaked. So you need to take advantage of that while you can here in the late stages of your 30s.
Bro, that gym is either empty or it has girls in it. I mean, it's honey babies. The best things in the world.
Do people still say honey babies? Remember that? Honey babies?
I've never heard that. You just ate yourself.
No, you know.
Honey babies.
Okay. I'm older than you, so yeah.
So here's the thing, though, about Ben and 147. It's a division that we just talked about. Haney has question marks around them. We're going to see when this Norman fight. If Norman beats Haney, Norman's going to be on top of the world, and that's a legitimate test. Barrios is Barrios. But it's not like this version that we saw of Ben on Saturday night, you know, in and out, twitchy, using his jab, fighting a very disciplined fight. You know, could he? I think he could hang with some of the guys at 147. 154, no. 147, yeah, because it isn't the greatest weight class. But we still have to see, because I think the jury's still out on Haney and Norman and Ryan Garcia and Rolly. You know what I mean? It's not like he's jumping into like an insanely talented division at 147. He's jumping into a division with names, yep, and big names and a lot of money.
Yeah, talented guys, but also guys that, like Haney, this is gonna be his third weight class, and you know, Ben is gonna be a big 47 pounder in a fight with Haney. Ryan Garcia, another guy in his third or fourth weight class, but he does have that game changing power. Brian Norman, a real welterweight, but you know, young and it's early in his world class, you know, elite level. And Crocker is there. He's looming. He looks like a real welterweight to me. That style that he employed, yeah, it's a good style with what he has, because he is explosive. He is athletic, physically strong. He's got a good motor. But the discipline that he showed against Eubank, we're not going to know how disciplined he really is until he has some resistance, because discipline is a really hard thing to maintain for 12 rounds. But if you got a guy in front of you who's not giving you anything back, yeah, stick to the game plan. He gave him nothing back. What happens when he's in there with guys like a Devin Haney and a Ryan Garcia or a Crocker, when they're not just there to get to the end, when they're actually fighting back and they're trying to win? Because at no point during that fight did it look like Eubank was really trying to win, or could he muster up enough to try and win? So great performance. I'll take him away from that. But again, like you said, there's going to be asterisks, and the jury is still out on Ben. But this version of Ben could make some noise if he can get back down to 47.
With that being said, did you want to see Ben step on the gas a little more and take out a guy that was, for lack of a better word, looked like a dead man in there? I mean, he got him in the 12th, got him down in the 12th. Would you want to see, like, if Ben really – a real statement here would have been Ben stopping Eubank rounds 9 through 12.
I mean, he almost did it. He almost did it in the 12th, and it. But it did. I think earlier. if he would have stepped on it earlier, he probably would have gotten him out of there. Because, like I said, Eubank was really on fumes. I would have liked to have seen his corner being like, you know what, man, this is it. This guy's prime. Go for it. Like when Floyd Mayweather beat Diego Corrales, his dad yelling from the corner, 2-3 more rounds, he's getting ready to go. Let's get him out of there, kind of thing. That's when you show true world class understanding of what's going on. We didn't see that. You know, he did the job. He was very workmanlike early on, stuck to the game plan. I was surprised. I thought he was going to go out there. Just go back to what you did in the first couple rounds of the first fight. You probably would get him out of there. But maybe Eubank was hitting him with things that were like, all right, keeping him honest enough. Because Eubank was throwing some good shots and did land some good shots late that you're like, okay, you know, he's still got a punch. He is still a bigger man. You know, he's been campaigning in classes for longer. So maybe it was that. Maybe it was just the immaturity of Ben at this level that, you know, he didn't see that option or take that option. But yeah, I agree. I would have liked to have seen him go for it and look more for that stoppage in those last couple of rounds.
John Latham, one of the three judges, had it dead even after 8 rounds.
That's insane.
Insane.
If you gave Eubank more than one round, and even that would be, I might have to argue with you, because the guy just wasn't there. He was on another planet last night.
I stopped scoring it after the 8th. I was like, there's no point. And this fight is going to be, this is a Conor Ben win unless he does something silly.
After 5, I texted you. I'm like, Ben's running away with this. Like that, because you could see Eubank just didn't have anything. It wasn't like he was going to have a late charge, you know, in the last half of the fight, because he basically had to start fast, get rounds, then he starts to weaken in the middle rounds if we're going by how the first fight went, and then he had to dig really deep at the end. But Ben wasn't allowing him to get into that kind of fight where it's just like, we're gonna scrap in the middle and go back blow for blow. But honestly, I think if Eubank did that, he would have got knocked out, because he just didn't have the juice.
It's pretty smart from Ben. It's like, all right, this guy's got nothing. I have some huge fights upcoming. I could do this the whole entire fight, you know, not get beat up like I did in the first fight. And now I'm on to the next and collect my check, collect my generational win for my lineage.
And revenge. Revenge for his first loss.
Revenge. All of that. And Hearn in the ring after. Listen, a couple shows ago, we said Eddie Hearn's the best promoter in boxing. So we're going to give it to you straight on the show. We're going to give credit, and we're going to just, when something is absurd, I'm going to bring it up. Hearn in the ring after. With Ben. And I understand that Hearn has been through it with Eubank and his dad, and Hearn was extra charged up for this one. Says in the ring afterwards, Conor Ben is an inspiration. We can learn something from this guy. He was down and out. He had no money. He was fighting legal battles. It made it sound like he was coming back from like an illness, like coming back from being sick. Like Conor Ben was down and out, homeless, sick. No. Like, stop, Eddie. Like, he was all self-inflicted. These were self-inflicted wounds that Conor Ben went through. He played the victim card. And yes, he did come out of it on the other end, because he is a privileged boxer and he's a big name. But Eddie afterwards was just a massive rolling of the eyes. And then
Ben completely shoots that down when he goes to Chris and he goes, not bad for two guys who grew up with silver spoons in their mouth. It's like, oh, it's like you just completely negated everything that Hearn said.
Well, Eddie was going through the whole PED scandal. That's what he was referring to. Right. He was referring to the last 2 years have been hell for my guy. Hell and back. Inspiration. You can learn from this. Really? Really? Like, that's why I think a lot of fans were watching this fight like, yeah. Ben looked good, but I remember watching the first fight. I was like, this is great. But like, you know, it's not really for a title. It's contrived. Second fight, I'm watching the same thing. Like, kind of like, you're almost watching it like, because there's just, you have to put it all into the sauce. You have to put the hydration clouds in. You have to put Eubank's age. You have to put the weight difference. You have to put everything that Ben has been through in the last few years. You have to all put that into the sauce. And it's up to you as a fan. And I will say this about boxing fans. They're some of the smartest. It's the hardest to get bullshit past a boxing fan. They see it all. They know it all. So, like, the Hearn stuff afterwards, and I don't know how insufferable Hearn will continue to be over the next week or two. I think Ben handled it very well. I mean, both guys did. Zero excuses after. You know, they hug it out. That's great. I think Ben really has learned from the last 2 years, and he's still going to be cocky, but, you know, he just seems a little different, a little more likable than he was during the investigation and all that, because he was really playing that victim card hard. As for the rehydration clause, came into focus in this fight, despite Eubank making zero excuses. But this was a huge part of the fight. I mean, it was probably the reason why Eubank came out the way he did. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, you said it on the last show. You're surprised that Eubank, with the win, didn't have something in the contract where it was going to be like, all right, if we fight again, like, we can't have this hydration clause, especially because of everything he went through after the fight. You know, he went to the hospital after the fight for dehydration. It wasn't because he had such a damaging fight, because it wasn't that damaging for Eubank. I mean, it was a very tough fight, both guys back and forth, but we see those kinds of fights all the time. The reason that Eubank went to the hospital after was because severe dehydration from trying to make that weight. And he actually didn't even make the rehydration, which I think actually helped him in the first fight, because making it this time certainly didn't help. But yeah, I hate rehydration clauses regardless. I think they're dangerous. I think they're stupid. I think you're handcuffing someone's ability, and you're also just putting them in severe danger. So a 12-round fight's a long time to go into not at peak hydration, especially for your brain. Your punch resistance goes down, your risk of injury goes up. It really puts it's very, very dangerous. That's why I hate the IBF plus 10-pound clause. And 10 pounds for guys at that size is not much. And I've heard some people be like, if you're getting more than 10 pounds, that's dangerous anyway. No, it's not. It's very, very common, and guys do it in much smaller weight classes than that. Chris Eubank is a big guy. Making 160 at 36 years old is not easy. Look, Ben put on almost 10 pounds from the weigh-in to the fight itself. So the fact that Chris Eubank had to be conscious of not putting on too much weight, quote unquote, too much weight, definitely makes you perk your ears up and be like, that's got to be something we have to talk about.
You believe it should be a percentage, correct?
Correct. So the IBF has having an absolute number of amount of weight that you can gain for across the board in weight classes. So you tell me a 108 pounder can gain 10 pounds, but also a light heavyweight can gain 10 pounds. That makes zero sense. It should be a percentage. 10% would make more sense. I would say that, gaining 10% at 160 would be 16 pounds. That's a lot of weight to gain between a weigh-in and a fight, but not uncommon. But definitely much more in terms of safety, having that extra little leeway. If you gain 12, you gain 13. That's the thing. If you gain 12, Dan, and then I got to go cut weight the morning of the fight, that's not good for anybody.
Absurd.
2 pounds Absurd. Doesn't seem like much, but having that to pull 2 pounds off of you before you step on a scale at 7 a.m. for a day of the fight is absurd. And it's just 2 pounds. Just 2 pounds. So if it's plus 10, it's a lot. So,
well, the 16, I think, would be perfect, because you can come in at 12, 13
10%.
And comfortably, or you can go up to 16, which is 6 more pounds than the 10.
Yeah.
You can't go past 16. I think that'd be a lot more healthy and something that they should take a look at. But props to Eubank, did not make any excuses. He accepted this deal. He accepted it twice.
Yep.
He knew what he was doing here. He took the money. A lot of fighters would do this. This is life-changing money for a guy that had money his whole life. This is life-changing money. So I know that Eubank's not making excuses, but I'm seeing a lot of people out there, like myself included, like, can we really give Ben the credit for the win? Well, yeah, this is the rule set under which they agreed to.
Yep.
So he agreed to it. He knew this is part of the fight. This is part of why some people were just completely turned off by these 24 rounds and everything that came along with it over the last 7-8 months. And it goes beyond the last 7-8 months. Remember, this fight was supposed to happen years ago. And that first fight was at 157. That's
right.
That's what they wanted to do to Eubank. It's insanity. And I know that there's some out there that's like, Eubank has made 160 comfortably for the last 6 fights. No, he didn't. He came in overweight last fight. Like,
yeah.
And you texted me, Chris, like, Eubank would have been smart to blow past the weight again.
Yeah, to blow past the second day weigh-in, just come in a couple pounds heavier and just be more comfortable and not have to worry about that, have that stress on the body and the mind. And I'm trying to think. He fought Cesar Mata, right? Is that who he fought a couple years ago? And, that fight, like, he looked fragile in that fight. I remember watching that because he got rocked early with a right hand by a guy who's essentially a punching bag at the world-class level. And I was like, ooh. I'm like, you can see the weight. As you
October of last year.
Yeah, as you age, it gets harder and harder to make the weight. I don't care who you are. Going down in weight, you know, as you get older is really, really difficult. We've seen it time and time again. Myself, Roy Jones Jr., like it's very difficult to do. And again, I keep reiterating, he's a big guy. He's tall. He's long. You know, he's got a big frame. He was a world class 68 pounder. he fought for world titles at 168. You know, so whittling himself down to 160 at, you know, this advanced age and this part of his twilight of his career, very dangerous. I hope he never does that again. I doubt we'll ever see him fight at 160 again. I don't know if we're ever going to see him fight again at all. But but it is what it is. You give, you know, Conor Benn got the win. He went out there. He looked good. Chris Eubank can do whatever he wants to do, you know, going on. He made life-changing money these last two fights. He's been well-paid his whole career anyway, but never got that title, though, and probably never will.
Yikes, yeah, that's tough. And classy guy. I think he didn't give any excuses after the fight because he's just a classy guy, and he also didn't give any excuses because we could just turn around and be like, bro, like, you accepted it. Can't say,
no,
like,
he took the deal.
Say Ben in the, Eubank in the post-fight was like, yeah, beat a bigger guy. They threw a hydration clause on me. And like, kind of like what Ryan Garcia did in the tank fight. It's like, well, you signed it. And Golden Boy did not want you to sign that. Oscar did not want Ryan Garcia to accept that. But Ryan Garcia wanted that fight so desperately that he did. Eubank, I think it was twofold. I think he was, you know, being a classy guy and also was like, you know what? Like, I just made a shit ton of money and
I signed that contract, bro. I signed that contract. You signed up for it. You know, you knew the risks. You knew it more than anybody how much it was going to affect you. So, and you still signed it. Is what it is.
With that being said, no need for a third fight. I mean, I got some trilogy questions thrown my way last night on the social mediums, and no, come on, that would really be just like wringing the towel out for the last little bit of sweat. Like, come on, man. Like, that. There's no need for a third fight.
Agreed. Agreed, and I think most people would agree. But listen, stranger things have happened. They might revisit this in a couple of years if things don't pan out for both these guys. I wouldn't be surprised.
Like that, oh, man, that would be sad. If Eubank's like 40, Ben has lost to a few welterweights and has tried his run at 47 and 54.
And just try and reignite the rivalry.
Third one. Ben has a lot more left, a lot more runway left. And like we said, has some interesting names. You know, a lot of people coming out of the woodworks calling him out. So Rich and Hitchens say he'd go up to 147. Shakur Stevenson, that they had a little dust up on Ariel's show. So like anyone will be calling out Ben because he's just puts asses in seats and he's a big name. For Eubank, yeah, I thought a Canelo fight was in the cards for him, even like a Shiraz fight if he had won. And I thought even a Canelo fight was in the cards if it was a great fight and, you know, there was some back and forth action. But when you look that bad and weight or no weight, and you're just going to be really hard for him to get a big name in his next fight if he even wants to fight again. Because he didn't make any excuses, Eubank, but he kept alluding to like something in his life that's been going on.
I saw that.
It's like a soft excuse, you know, not a full excuse. I've been going through a lot just to even get into the ring. And everyone's like, does that have anything to do with the weight? And he said, no, blah, 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 blah. So maybe we'll hear from Eubank there. As for the entire card, Jack Catterall picked up a nice win. Looked better.
Looked good.
Look, he got Boozy Ennis in his corner. Has been active, Catterall. This is his third fight of the year. And he had like a little extra spite in him. You know, that's something I feel like he lacked in his career. And he got the late stoppage. And I thought, you know, Jack Catterall, okay. You're looking better. You're looking more entertaining. You're getting stoppages. And he's at 147 now. And I think he's a mandatory, I believe.
Yeah, he showed really good balance, especially with that finish at the end there, the way he was letting those punches fly. Impressive performance. You know, Usman is a tough guy, older guy. He's really only known
for beating.
Yeah, he's really only known for upsetting Josh Taylor in his hometown. But a tough, solid guy and a good win for Catterall, Jack the Cat.
Jack the Cat.
Catterall. Yeah, he's a nice guy. And a talented guy, good guy. Again, he's left a lot to the imagination in terms of being exciting, but this was a much more exciting performance. I think this is also kind of like this has a little personal victory attached to it because of all the controversy with Josh Taylor and Catterall, you know, that first fight where he could have been undisputed if he had gotten the decision that most people thought he deserved. You know, he got the revenge fight, but it wasn't for the undisputed when he got Taylor the second time. But then Taylor also lost to this guy. So it's like, I got another win over a guy who beat you. I beat you the first time for real. So I think that's a little extra feather in the cap for Jack Catterall because of the relationship with Taylor.
Yeah, he looked good, and he's going to get a big fight. And he's got Matchroom with him, which I thought was a good move for him. He got Bouzianis, which is, when it first got announced, I was like, wow, that's a strange partnership. You know, got a guy from Philly and a guy from UK who's so quiet, but it's turned out so far to be very fruitful. Wait, just to go back, the 50 Cent aspect, we forgot to touch on that. That was a surprise. That was fun.
Yeah. It was. It was.
I just caught you off guard there.
Yeah. That was a little bit out of nowhere.
Because I really wanted to touch on it because the reason I'm bringing this up is because someone said afterwards, "Damn, homie, in April you were the man, homie."
Yeah. Was the fight in April too?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Damn, homie.
Immediately had to post my picture of 50, and you sent me your picture of 50.
That was a great walkout. 50 Cent? Who else has he come out with?
Someone pulled it up. He just, when you're at 50 Cent stature and you've just been around so many athletes and so many fighters and so many, you could pull up just any pictures, you know? You could pull, been around winners and he's been around losers.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that conversation even came about. You know,
getting surprised. I was like, what?
Yeah, 50 Cent. I was out of nowhere. I was like, this guy's walkout is. I mean, the walkouts in the UK are awesome because the fans are so great. You know, Ben had his couple different songs. The walkouts are so long. It was great. Well, Ben's especially, but
four songs long.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But drums.
But yeah, I think the 50 Cent Eubank walkout was like, whoa! That guy's always full of surprises. He is a showman. Say whatever you will about him, about his performance that night. But he is a showman. He was classy in defeat. But yeah, I think we can move on from this rivalry and these guys fighting and any of this stuff.
And 50 Cent. We'll go back to Adam Azim. From 50 Cent to Adam Azim.
Oof. Talent.
Washed Scooby.
Talented.
Washed him.
Talented is Adam Azim. I had a lot of people asking me about this fight going, you know, beforehand. You know, a lot of Northeast guys, U.S. guys, like, yo, who do you got in the Scooby versus Azim fight? I'm like, I have never seen anything from Scooby that shows me that he can deal with a guy like Adam Azim. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, it was a complete washout, dominated through and through, and just broke him toward the end of the fight. It turned into just the toughness of Scooby, you know, being physically strong, taking a ridiculous amount of body shots all night long. And Adam Azim just put on a showcase. That was a showcase performance against a very solid guy who brought it at the weigh-in. He brought it at the press conference. He brought it on socials. You know, they brought it everywhere except for when it came time for the bell to ring and actually fight, because he really had nothing for him. Just different levels of class between those two guys.
Yeah, Azim was minus 1,100.
Yeah.
And yeah, same thing. Right. Like people, I mean, Scooby just looks the part. Very, you know, very in shape, very good on the mic. Azim, there was questions still about him. Is he the real deal or not? And I remember thinking in my mind, I didn't want to disrespect Scooby because I liked the guy. And I was like, this is not going to be pretty. I mean, and I feel like Azim could have got him out of there early, but he was respecting Scooby's athleticism and power. And he was just pumping that jab. He just fought a very, very smart fight, Azim. And then late, drowned him late. Very good fighter. Promising prospect in UK boxing, which they desperately need. Rest of the undercard,
prospect or contender at this point, because I could see him in a world title fight soon. He's good.
I would say he's in that like middle ground, right? Like not like prospect is not he's jumped in between the gray area between prospect and like title like and contender. He's like right on the doorstep, I think at least. I mean, he's really good. It's just he's got a boxer behind him and. Rest of the card was okay. Nothing really to write home about. They moved it quick. I'll give them that. Pacing of it was really good. So that's that over in the UK. Over to Mexico on Tubi.
Mexico!
Rafael Espinosa, 11th round TKO of Arnold Kaga. Another fan-friendly, TV-friendly performance from Espinosa. Probably the best featherweight Yeah, he is the best featherweight in the world. There are
He's got to be champs. Yeah.
He's got to be, right? I mean, he looked really good, and he's just such a just fun to watch. I mean, his great offensive fighter. His uppercuts were brutal. Kagai landed some of his own shots of his own and was proved to be very tough. But Espinosa is the goods at 126.
Yeah, he's a combination puncher. He's a punishing guy, and he drags you into fights, but he gets hit. God, does he get hit? Kagai landed some big shots. He really had some well-timed overhand rights and left hooks. That concerns me when you look at the talent at featherweight. And he's been able to walk through these guys' shots. You know, he's kind of take one to give one, and then he follows up with 3, 4, 5, 6 punches, which has been his moniker. But you can't do that with guys like Angelo Leo, who can start you, you know, with a left hook. You know, it's the way that he did to Venato Lopez. I saw a lot of things that Kagai was doing that Angelo Leo does better, and that's got to be concerning for anyone who's backing him to be the guy at the division, Espinosa. So, yeah, good performance, workmanlike performance, tough guy in front of him. And someone asked me about, well, what's up with this guy, Kagai? And I've called his last couple fights. I called the fight where he lost to Joaquin Gonzalez. And I was like, he's solid. He's very solid. He's good. He's pretty good at everything. He's tough. He's not great at anything. So that's what you would kind of expected him to take a bit of a beating. But I thought he'd land a lot more punches than I expected, and effective punches. Because the guy can fight. But yeah, Espinosa is part of the reason why we love him so much, part of the reason why he is so exciting. There's holes. There's holes in that defense, man. The guy gets hit, and he's fun to watch, but that shit runs out. Almost like a Venato Lopez. Venato Lopez was the man at featherweight. And you're like, wow, this guy, he's a monster. He's beating everybody up, killing guys, muscling guys up. And then he gets starched. Because at the highest level, defense matters, man. The best fighters in the world don't get hit that much. So there is some concern. I like Rafael Espinosa. I like him as a person. I like him as a fighter. I like him as a, you know, his style, everything about him. But got to be careful, man. Can't be getting hit with those big clean shots like that.
Yeah, everything you said, I pretty much in lockstep with. Bruce Carrington went on to Twitter and calls him out. You don't hear many people calling out Rafael Espinosa, but Bruce Carrington is one of them. He's banging that drum. They're both signed with Top Rank. I don't know what's going on with Top Rank. I will say the Tubi things are awesome. They're free. It was cool to hear Corey Erdman. But, you know, there were some parts where it's like, morning. You know, you were talking to Erdman?
Yeah, like that, because his call was great. It was really good. He's so good. He's so good on the mic. He's so good. He's so knowledgeable. He does the homework. And he just sounds good. He just sounds good on the mic. So I had that reach out on him. He did a great job.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's great. And like I said, I'm happy that these fighters are getting dates still. I'm happy that we're able to watch it for free. But there are certain aspects of that Tubi, they're limited. You know, there were times where it's just like a wide shot, and it felt like I was watching like a stream, or like, you know, there's just weird commercial. It's just not the smoothest production. You know, I can't complain too much, but it's like, all right, let's get a streaming home for Top Rank, because they have some serious talent here, and I think they're getting closer and closer to it. I really don't know. I'm just going off of some things I see and hear that, you know, they should have some things. Maybe that Zayas Barao fight ends up on the new streaming platform for Top Rank, because that's a pretty big one. But yeah, so Bruce Carrington calls out Espinosa afterwards. Carrington is ranked 6th by Ring Magazine at 126. Angelo Leo is the other champion, or Carrington is not a champion, but at 126, Leo is the champ. He's fighting February on Pro Box with you guys. Nick Ball is the other champion. Stephen Fulton rounds out the champions at featherweight, but he is fighting at 130. So I expect Fulton to vacate.
Is it going to be one of those situations where he has to vacate as soon as he fights for that other title at 30, or is he going to be able to come back down and hold on to it? That's, I mean, I know you probably don't have that answer, but that's something to think about.
Just asking a question out loud. I don't think he'll ever fight at featherweight again. He's up there and, you know, like, I don't see him making that weight. I even know the better fights are at featherweight, and like, I don't see him getting the Inoue rematch. I think he's just a big guy. He even said he'll fight at 147. Fulton. I know he's just tweeting out crazy stuff, but like, I think he was frustrated with the Oshaki Foster situation going on and off, on and off, that he was like, I'll fight at 147. F it. So I don't know. I don't know.
I love Philly fighters, man. Love it. I love it. Yeah, I'll jump up 3 weight classes. I've already jumped up 3. Cool. Let's go.
Yeah, I wear Timberland and jorts and Timberlands and brick the internet. I love Stephen Fulton. I can't wait to get out to San Antonio and do some content with him because he seems like a really, really. I've interviewed him a few times, but
cool. Boy, yeah, so there's like
he's the best, bro. Four different champs at featherweight. It's a great division, but it's like kind of stalled out a little bit. It was one of my favorite divisions last year. Like in a way, I still think is far away from joining it. Maybe he doesn't join it at all. I think the Nakatani fight will be the one at 122. So I don't even know if Inoue is going to be there soon. So I think it's Espinosa's division right now. But like you said, Chris, very vulnerable. So like I don't see a Carrington beating him. Still want to see it. Like Espinosa needs to fight someone now. And Carrington is ready, willing, and able. Same promotion. Top 10 Carrington. Just that, come on. Espinosa Carrington. Just make that next.
I think those three fights would be easy. The Carrington fight, obviously, he's been screaming from the rafters, from the rooftops about it. But even the Leo fight, they've worked with Top Rank before. ProBax has, you know, that's how he won the title against Fernando
Lopez.
That won't
be until at least second half of next year.
Right. Because he's got a February date. And
Nick Ball, what's his deal?
Nick Ball, probably a harder fight to make, but man, how cool would that fight be? You got a guy who's 5'2" and a guy who's 6'1". That might be the biggest. Ball. That's certainly going to be the biggest height difference in featherweight history. But I wonder, you know, like.
Oh, he fought Sam Goodman. He beat him. Nick, you know, his nickname is The Wrecking.
I mean, why wouldn't it be? The Wrecking Ball, Nick Ball, especially with the way he fights. He fights like a cannonball, like he's shot out of a cannon. I like Nick Ball. He's a lot of fun to watch.
Nick the Wrecking Ball. I love that.
I just don't I don't see him giving Espinosa trouble.
Really? I actually give Ball more of a chance than Leo.
I don't. I think Nick Ball Leo is a really tough fight for Leo. That just the height is just too much. I don't know how it's a bridge too far. to 5'2" to 6'1" and Espinosa, you know, does know how to use that length and he can punch. It's a really uphill battle for Ball to get on the inside with that. But if he does, you know, that's the thing. People don't understand. When you're a shorter guy, you actually have advantages on the inside. Problem is getting there. You know, your arms are shorter. Your range is tighter. But you got to get past that critical distance line without taking too much damage. And Ball does get
Speaking
hit.
Of weights and everything, Espinosa, huge. Always wonder how he makes that weight. But not only did he make the weight at the weigh-in on Friday, then he busted out into song. I've never had to make weight before. Chris. You have.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Could you imagine busting out in like a full-fledged like song after you just tipped the scales and probably had a tough cut?
Regardless of the weigh-in, no one wants to hear me sing. So that wouldn't ever happen. But in terms
regardless
of, like,
your shitty voice, could you imagine singing? After cutting weight.
I could, depending on the weight cut. But yeah, I mean, later in my career, probably not. But earlier, yeah. I mean, I used to make weight pretty easy, you know. All of my welterweight fights, forget it.
Here that made weight easy.
Yeah, all of my welterweight fights were super easy. I was eating oatmeal on the way to the weigh-in for the welterweight fights. So that I could have done one-handed cartwheels at their weigh-ins at 47. 40 was a little bit different, especially later on. But yeah, no, you're excited to make weight, dude. Making weight. As much as it sucks, I used to always say, I'm like, I would say it all the time while I'm cutting weight. I'm like, you know what this means? I get to fight tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that's the mentality that fighters need to have. It's like, they can't wait. I'm struggling right now. Yes, this is a sacrifice right here, but I get to fight tomorrow. I get to get paid to bust somebody's ass in front of a whole bunch of people. So, being happy after a weigh-in and, you know, having a celebratory sing, I don't think that's too out of the realm of reality or whatever.
Richard Torres, KO1. Not much to write home here. He had cornrows. That was interesting. His opponent was huge, and Torres from the opening bell closed the distance within seconds. His opponent decided not to jab at all, despite having every advantage physically. Torres pieced him up. Broke his nose within 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Nose broken of his opponent. They go to the corner. It's pouring blood. And the doctor's like, hey, does that hurt? And he goes, ow! the like a cartoon like type of owl coming from this big menacing guy. I burst into laughter. I don't mean to laugh, but it was just such a, it was just one of those moments that was just so funny. But Torres gets the win. Didn't learn much from him. Just remain active, stay active. And I said this on Twitter. I got a little bit of pushback. It's like, I don't know how far Richard Torres can go, but I do know that he presents something a little different at heavyweight. Very crafty, small, like on his toes. I just don't know how far he can go because he hasn't fought anyone.
Yeah, I agree. And it's tough to be, you know, the 230-pound heavyweight these days. You know, he like you said, he's crafty. You know, he's got a big amateur background. He's tenacious. He's super aggressive. He's got some heavy hands too. He's putting hurt on all these guys. You know, that Guido Vianello fight is looking really good in the rear view. That's his best win thus far.
That's a good win.
That's a very good win. Guido Vianello is good. Yeah.
Kind of forgot about that.
Yeah, it's a very, very good win.
I wish I would have known that when I was fighting people on Twitter. It's like,
yeah, I mean,
that's a good win.
It's a very, very good win. And that gives me a little, because I was with you. You know, prior to that fight, I was like, I don't see how this guy can really contend, even at a sub-championship level, once he gets up there. But then that Guido Vianello win, who is a true super heavyweight, that guy's big, he's athletic, he can punch. So, and he won that fight handily, and he showed his class that night. So on the basis of that performance and that win, I could see him making some noise. I love him calling out Moses Atelma because he's a guy that I don't think a lot of people are calling out, you know, at this point, because he's a, you know, the second coming of Mike Tyson and whatnot. But as dangerous as Atelma is, you know, you got to look at Torres, you got to look at his amateur pedigree, you got to look at the opponents that he's fought, mostly the Guido Vianello fight, and you got to look at his style. It's an interesting matchup. It's an interesting fight. I don't dislike that fight at all.
Torres is 26 years old. It's very sparse at heavyweight. The competition is, it's either very tippy top or it's the guy he fought on Saturday night. So there's really not much in between. Just stay what you're doing. Keep gradually building it up. Trust your matchmakers at top rank. Atelma's going to do his thing. He's clearly ahead of you. There's only so many fighters. There's only so many heavyweights. So if Torres keeps doing his thing and works his way into like a mandatory situation, and say like two years from now, 3 years from now, Atelma's on top, and it's like, all right, one of Atelma's next fights is going to be Richard Torres. Marketable fight, fun fight. We get to see more from Torres. He's a heavyweight. He's an American heavyweight with some promise, so he's going to get attention. Emiliano Vargas went the 10 rounds for the first time in his career. You know, shout out to his opponent, Montrell, who just took a ton of punishment, somehow was still standing, went down early. I thought this was a big-time learning experience for Vargas. He's going to be able to look at the tape Monday or today or this week and be able to work on some things and be able to improve in different spots. That's some blowout. So I know there are going to be some detractors that say, oh, well, he didn't get this guy out of here. But no, he can't have it both ways. You can't want rounds and want tougher opponents, but then I get upset when a guy goes the distance. So I actually like this performance from Vargas.
Yeah, and he shut the guy out. He got to show his skills. And listen, it wasn't a not for trying. The guy was super tough. He took a ton of blows, you know, throughout the whole fight, head and body. So you know, it's we got to see more of this kid, but we got to keep stepping him up. And if he doesn't get the stoppage, you want him to have fights like that where he's dominating and winning every single round. It was a shutout. So I'm not knocking anything that they're doing right now. Obviously, they're moving him a little slower than you would see some other guys, but it's because of his star power. You know, he's kind of like he's at this point. Well, I'm not going to say he's the opposite of a guy like Conor Benn, but like, you know, obviously famous father, marketable as hell, and you wanna also bring him to the point where he's ready for these big fights. He's only 21 years old, and he has 16 fights. So, and he's wildly mature when you talk to him. And I think that was a mature performance. So I think they're doing the right thing with him. I don't think we need to move him any quicker than we are. Keep him fighting the way that he's fighting, the guys that he's fighting. And as long as he keeps putting up the wins that he's, you know, putting up and the performances that he is, you know, whether he's blowing a guy out and setting records in MSG for first round KOs, or he's dominating. Or he's dominating tough guys and pitching shutouts. I think his progression is right on time for 21 years old.
Then Dolfo Delgado escapes
by the skin of his teeth.
down in the 12th round. It's actually really probably the fight of the night against Golaz. IBF mandatory is now Delgado. So this is my first time really watching Delgado, like, up close. Up and down performance. I thought, I was like, all right, this guy's going to blow him. He's going to get him out. He was clearly a better fighter. And then, you know, Golaz is landing shots, staying in the fight, drops him in the 12th. I didn't score it. I had it on kind of in the background at that point, but Delgado gets the win. He is now the mandatory at IB in the IBF.
And I was having this conversation with our man, Corey Erdman, earlier today, because this fight came up. And we both were in agreement. Lindolfo Delgado, at one point, looked like a really good, promising prospect, contender, potential champion one day. I just think he's getting stale. He's stagnant. He hasn't gotten the big step-up fights that he wants, and he's kind of been treading water for the last couple years. And sometimes that can ruin a guy because they start putting up kind of dud performances, or they're performing under their potential level time and time again, and you start questioning, like, does this guy deserve this shot? Is he really what we thought he was? Maybe he's overhyped. When in reality, it's not that he was overhyped. It's just that they're getting stale and stagnant in their training, and you know, they're aging out. And I think he's 30 now, and spending all those rough camps at Robert Garcia's gym, dealing with monsters and getting, you know, damaging sparring day in, day out, week in, week out, month after month after month after year after year after year. This guy might be wasted, maybe wasted talent. We might never see him achieve his true potential because of the stagnation and how long it's taken him to get his shot. It's a shame. Wow. Because I really think he is talented.
He's 30.
Yeah, not great.
Spring chicken.
Needs his shot like ASAP.
Well, this is it. He's IBF. He should get into some type of a title situation. We'll see. We end the show with this Joseph Parker news. Not much we can really dive into here, but I did want to get your thoughts on it and make sure we touched on it. So Joseph Parker tests positive for cocaine on fight day for the Wardley fight. He was tested voluntarily on October 25th, which is the day of the fight, came back for cocaine. Do a simple Google search. Cocaine stays in your system for 2 to 4 days. So do the math. He either did cocaine, allegedly, on the day of the fight, day before fight week. Parker is saying, no, this is wrong. His team is denying it. We're going to go for the B sample, which usually always comes back the same as the A sample. Shocking news. Shocking. We hear PEDs. We hear all sorts of things. We very rarely hear recreational
drugs,
like cocaine. And I don't know, man. A lot of jokes were made, Chris, and you know, a lot of silliness out there, but there's a lot of different ways this can go. This could be a guy that was tampered. It could be a guy that has a serious drug problem. And I hope it's just a lot of different things here. And I think Parker deserves the benefit of the doubt, but he's not going to get it from some in the boxing world, but shocking to say the least.
Yeah. I really can't speak on this because not enough information out. I don't know really what's going on, but this is, I mean, it's not PEDs. It's definitely not good. It's really not good. But I hope it's not what you said, that there's some kind of serious issue going on in terms of like addiction and you know, utilizing what can be a very dangerous drug the day of a fight, you know, going into a fight. I mean, that puts your heart and cardiovascular system in really dangerous places if you're talking about physiologically. But also, I mean, people still do cocaine. That's a really dangerous drug now. Fentanyl's everywhere. Fentanyl's in stuff. That's
cocaine's a hell of a drug. I just watched the Eddie Murphy doc on Netflix. Everyone has to watch that. It is so good. And Rick James was all over it and made me think.
I'm Rick James. What did Five Finger say to the first?
And Eddie Murphy was talking about being locked in Rick James's house in Buffalo for 2 weeks because of a snowstorm.
Snowstorm inside or outside?
Exactly. But Eddie Murphy said he never did drugs, which I found. I knew a decent amount about Eddie Murphy. Never drank, never did drugs. All his friends, all the comics on that documentary said Eddie was not the party guy. Wow. He was not the center of attention at parties. He was in the background drinking Coca-Cola.
What the hell do you do? What do you do at Rick James's house for 2 weeks?
He make a hit song, Party All the Time.
There you go.
Dude, 1985, Eddie Murphy had the number one song, number one movie, number one comedy special.
Wildly talented human being. And all of them were good. Normally, you got guys who like, you know, like do a couple different things. Like Jimmy Fox, for example. Jimmy Fox, super funny comedian, amazing actor. His music was pretty good, you know? Like,
still good.
Still good. Slow jams? Good. Still very good. You've trusted me. But Eddie Murphy, man, forget it. Like,
well, he was the first. That's what this was all. He was the first, like, African-American leading guy. Like he was just everything.
And then he was a leading man. He was a leading man in Hollywood. He was everything. Yeah. Sex symbol.
Five minutes into the documentary, he's talking about how much he loves boxing, and he's got Muhammad Ali on the wall. He's got Sugar Ray Leonard on the wall. It's like 5 minutes in, he's talking about his love for boxing and how it's similar to show business. I was like, that's so cool.
Yeah, I gotta give that a watch.
It's on Netflix. Very, very good. Yeah, but Parker, we're going to find out. What I did want to get from you is the part about it not being a PED. It's not classified as a performance-enhancing drug. We know about cocaine that you can go – it can raise your energy levels. So, mm-hmm. There's nothing here. Like, you can't snort a line of coke and go into the ring.
No. I mean, no.
It's going to wear off by the time you get to
the ring. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, the timing of its positive effects are really short. That's why people do so much of it, because you're chasing that high. You're chasing the dragon.
It's a devil's drug, man.
Yeah. In terms of a performance enhancing drug, it's especially a long 12-round fight. You know, I remember hearing stories about guys in the 80s and 90s that were blow was everywhere, and guys are doing cocaine. That was kind of the boxer drug, because it helps you make weight. You're not hungry and you move faster. But he's a heavyweight. He doesn't need that to make weight.
He came in the heaviest he's ever been.
Yeah. So that's not it. If it is what it is, you know, the case that, you know, this is not a dusting, you know, because of a supplement or it was an accidental whatever, it does kind of make you think like, this could be a problem. You know, it could be an issue that he has, which would be really unfortunate because Joe Parker is a great guy. But, I don't know. I don't really know what to say about this. I think we got to wait for more information. The B sample is going to be the same. I don't think that's almost never, literally never been different. And it's a shame for him to take the loss where he did because of how close he was. And we've talked about it on past shows. And then this on top of it, Joe Parker's down bad.
Bro, imagine he won.
Oof. Yikes.
Gets the Usyk fight. The last 3 weeks have been, all right, we're going to set up this Usyk fight and then this cocaine test. That would be a very boxing story.
Oh, very unfortunate boxing story, yeah. But no, let's not, because you texted me that the other day and I was like, I don't even want to think about that. And I don't, because, but listen, it's bad enough. It's bad enough to take a loss and then get hit with this. So, yeah.
We'll find out one way or another. We'll be back next week or end of the week for the big card. It's here. Ring 4. November 22nd. Devin Haney, Brian Norman, Benavidez. Puma versus Bam. Abdullah Mason. We're going to figure out a way to jam that into an episode. Sam Noakes. We have to do like 10 minutes on every fight.
Good card.
Set a clock.
It's one of those, you know, Riyadh cards where they pack everybody. You know, it's a good card top to bottom. Really meaningful fights too. And it's going to be afternoon, right? Saturday afternoon?
In the States, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be
championship quadruple header.
That's going to be a grill out all day, watch fights Saturday type for me. So I'm super excited for that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. It's freezing here in New York. Freezing!
Well, I'm here right now. I'm in Jersey. It's cold and stuff like
that. You know what it is for us Eastern, anyone that listens in the Northeast? A lot of wind lately. What's up with the wind?
Very windy. Very windy. I'm on my run today. I felt like I was running with like a weighted vest on because I was just constantly getting hit by
wind. Is so obnoxious. Like I can deal with cold. Wind is just obnoxious. It's obnoxious, son of a bitch, wind. I hate wind.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Get rid of it?
I don't think we can do that. You know, it's part of climate. It's part of
atmosphere. It's probably some type of beneficial thing it's needed.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely beneficial. We got...
Time to end the show.
It's time to get out of here. This is
check yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Say those DMs unless you have a reason or or a solution to get rid of this wind. I hate this wind.
And be careful with that wind out there, people.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.